warning. The Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Per the warning, this is the Catholic Man Show. Welcome, I am Adam Minahan, sitting here in studio with my co-host, best friend since 5 years old, fellow parishioner of St. Benedict, partner in the Catholic radio station we do here in Tulsa, award-winning humility
award-winning humility guy.
Yeah. David Niles. I stretched it out as long as I could, man. That was about as good as I could get.
I'll give you a C minus.
Okay. Better than some of my grades in college. All right. No. We said the studio because where we record from is upstairs in my house. It's not my study. It's not the studio. It's the studio.
Yeah. And we're two studs.
So, if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, hang in there because we have a very special guest coming up.
Really excited about the guest
with
today.
Not only the guest, but also the topic. We have it's a bam bam 1-2 punch. But this is a little different of a Catholic show than normal. We do three things every episode. Dave, the three things are:
tell them what they've won. No, the three things we do every episode are: one, open review and enjoy a manly beverage; two, highlight a man gear of some kind, just stuff that dudes like, man stuff, man gear, talk about that. We talk about man stuff. Then three, we have a topic, a manly topic, and our manly discussion.
Yeah.
And we do it like a man.
We absolutely. We enjoy the finer things in life.
Yeah.
And we like to have fun, so we're gonna have fun on this show. This is gonna be a really fun show.
We also like to suffer.
Hopefully everybody is here this week, Holy Week.
Yeah, hang in there.
Yeah,
you can make it.
Absolutely, you're pretty close to being over.
Yeah, tomorrow. I mean, you've got to get through tomorrow, but
yes,
you can do it.
We can. Yeah, because it's actually the end of what is sundown on Friday. Is that what it is?
I don't know.
Because
it's like,
I know. I don't really want to even get into it because it just seems like it changes on you depending on who says
what.
Yeah,
I mean, technically, I think you're right because the Triduum begins.
Mm-hmm.
Sundown on Friday and Lent is over.
Right. And then it goes to Friday night, Saturday, Good Friday, Saturday, and then Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so like Dave said, the three things we do is open review and enjoy a man beverage. So that's what we do in this segment. This is what we do. We open review and enjoy a man beverage. How we got started on this, why we did it, is because we have a men's group that we get together. We open up a nice beer or a whiskey.
Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think Lent ends on Thursday.
It's Thursday night.
Not Friday night.
Okay. I think you're right, actually.
Didn't want to scandalize anybody.
Whew.
With lies.
Dodged that bullet. Whew. Okay. So,
sorry. Anyway, what were you saying?
Yeah. So we had a men's group where we get together, we open up a beer or a whiskey, and we have tasting notes. We enjoy the beverage, and we have a theological, philosophical discussion to the best that we can with a group of guys.
Promoting
authentic brotherhood, promoting virtue, especially in this watered-down culture that we live in, that we want men to be real men, you know, be the husbands and fathers and men that you're called to be. So, Dave, this episode, though, because it is Holy Week.
Wait, let me do it.
I was going to let you. I was teeing you up.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, so today, the only reason I stopped you is because I had an idea.
Okay.
And I'm going with it. We have an official and an unofficial man beverage today. Okay? The official man beverage for this episode is the blood of Christ Jesus, the Eucharist. However, we're not sipping on the Eucharist today. So our unofficial beverage and one which we are partaking in is water. Yes, water. That's what we're drinking. It's Holy Thursday. And for some reason, it just didn't feel right to be, you know, in like a celebratory kind of fashion this mm-hmm. evening. Mm-hmm. So we're drinking water.
Yes.
And actually, it's delicious water.
It's a delicious water. It's a very transparent color.
Yeah, yeah. And the aroma
is very
that,
neutral.
Is that
a, it's a very neutral color.
Is that a cold smell I'm getting?
Yes, it is a cold smell. It's distilled by God.
And Brita, I think.
Possibly a little bit of Brita.
And I'm pretty sure Brita as well. Because I got it out of the thing in your fridge.
The Brita, yeah, filter.
So, actually, it is really good. Shout out to Brita. I mean, I guess they're doing it right.
So, anyway, we typically open, like I said, a beer or a whiskey of some sort and talk about why we enjoy the finer things in life, always in moderation. But because water, I mean, technically you have to drink water in moderation too, because you can die from drinking too much water.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that has happened to people.
So,
and we're drinking them today out of your tulip glasses. So
tulip. Yeah. Yeah. My tulip beer glasses.
If you don't know what a tulip glass is, it's sort of like a red wine glass that's made for drinking beer. It's kind of like a little, like a squatty red wine glass. I don't know. Is that how you would describe it?
I guess.
With like a short stem.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're very cool glasses, and you need them for drinking like some of the heavier beers. I mean, they're really the best thing to drink them out of.
I mean, yeah, a lot of like quadruple ales are always served in these tulip glasses. Mm-hmm. But, so anyway, so we're drinking water today. That's our man beverage. You have to have it to stay alive,
which is so important. Important. you got you know, cover your basics first, okay? But you know, the word whiskey means water of life.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, in Gaelic. So it's,
you know what you just said. You know, we had cover your basics, and that's what we're gonna do today in our episode.
That's true.
We're gonna cover the basics in theology of the body.
Yeah, so we're doing a two-parter, guys. This is the first time we've ever done a two-parter.
Yeah, we like to highlight new things that we do on the show.
So we have, it's our first unofficial and official man beverage. The official man beverage is the blood of Christ. Okay? That's the official one.
Okay.
The unofficial one is water.
Okay.
And that's what we're drinking.
Yes.
But the official one is the blood of Christ.
Okay.
Which, if you really think about it, is the manliest man beverage. I mean, you're not going to top that one.
No.
So, that's a first.
Okay.
That we have two official, unofficial, and this is, we're doing a two-parter.
Yes. With Father Chris Petrasco. Petrasco.
Petrasco.
Petrasco.
Remember he said, because it's like trash.
Yeah, Petrasco.
Yeah.
I've been following him for a long time on Facebook. He posts all of his homilies and talks.
He has a podcast.
Yes, he has a podcast out, and he's been on a Pints with Aquinas with Matt Fred.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we're really looking forward to having him on the show. He's going to be on in the third and fourth segment of our show.
The second half
of our show. Yes. Mm-hmm. Dave, this is actually our 101st episode of the Catholic Man Show.
101.
I want to give a shout out to all Council of Man members, because they, after we were recorded last week's episode, afterwards they posted a video that they put together
that was amazing.
Just kind of like a thank you, but it was between the Council of Man and our wives got it together and had all of our family and friends.
Saint Stephen, I think, was principal organizer. So thanks, Thank you, St. Stephen.
And our wives. I think our wives played a big role in that as well, because they got all of our family members, too.
Adam, what is the Council of Man?
The Council of Man are men who want to support the Catholic Man Show. They enjoy the Catholic Man Show. They want to support us, and they give us $10 a month to support. They go to thecatholicmanshow.com, and they donate $10 a month. As a thank you gift, right off the bat, the first month, we send a Glencairn glass to you. The Catholic Man Show Glencairn glass, which is a whiskey glass, etched with our... laser etched with our logo on it.
With lasers.
With lasers, yeah. Yes. And then they also get extra content that we provide typically on a monthly basis. And we have a Facebook group that has like over 150 guys in the group. And that's where all manly things happen, on Facebook. It's a whole lot of fun.
The Facebook group is the best.
Yeah, it really is. So anyway, you can go to thecatholicmanshow.com if you are interested in supporting the Catholic Man Show. All of our money, we don't like... keep the money. We don't pocket the money. We always throw it back into the show. So
yeah, and it's tax deductible.
That's true. That is true. It is tax deductible. If you're listening for the first time, we're on about 13 different Catholic radio stations, and the podcast on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher.
So if you want the Catholic Man Show to come to your local Catholic radio station, call them up. Tell them you want the Catholic Man Show, and then tell them to call us. And we'll say, sure, here you go.
Yeah, we'll do it.
We'll hook them up.
So anyway, when we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. That's what we do in the second segment. We're here drinking water. The last half of our show, we're going to have Father Chris on. Hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your water glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I am David Niles, sitting here in studio with Adam Minahan, a.k.a. The Tongue. It's weird to talk about how good the water is, like, but it is very good water.
You may want to tell them why you call me The Tongue.
Because you're good at tasting stuff.
Yeah, the tasting notes of typical whiskeys when we're drinking them.
Yeah, that's why.
It was just good to... say why, I think.
No, I actually prefer leaving it a mystery. Yeah. Let them wonder.
I hope that your Holy Week is going well. You know, it's interesting, Dave. Last year we talked about this during Holy Week, but something that we always do as a family for Holy Week on Good Friday is we watch The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something that we always do. And when we watch The Passion, we did, I think you actually, this is your idea, but we've implemented it for our family as well, but... as we watch The Passion, each throughout the movie, you know, it's basically the five mysteries of the Rosary, of the sorrowful
mysteries
yeah. of the Rosary. And so, after you know the agony of the garden, we stop the movie, we pause it, and we pray a decade of the Rosary, and then we keep the movie going. And so, what it does is it gives you that visual image. It's really easy to meditate. Talk about, you know, some of the tough things for me when I'm praying the Rosary is that I'll get through almost the whole decade, maybe the ninth or tenth beat, and realize, oh man, I wasn't even meditating on any of this. This whole mystery, I didn't think about it one time. Yeah, I was just going, you know, and I was...
You're singing my song. I've literally prayed an entire Rosary where I finish and think, did I just pray the Rosary? You know, like... I've just been distracted the whole time. Didn't give a single thought to what I was praying, you know, and I think there's kind of a problem there, obviously.
Right.
When my prayer has become so repetitious that it's...
You know, you're not able to drown out or silence the things that are distracting you. Yeah, I mean,
it's not a problem with the prayer. It's a problem with my lifestyle or something, you know. Right. But anyway, I've totally been there. So when you do it, when you watch the movie, because I've kind of gone back and forth on this, you watch... like the scourging at the pillar. So you'll watch the whole thing, pause, and then pray the Rosary.
Because it's actually interesting that there's almost natural breaks in between each one.
Well,
in the movie.
So I've kind of just, I've done it one way and I've done it the other way, and I'm curious to get, see what other people think. Because I've also tried praying it while watching, like not pausing the movie and like praying while the, you know, the flogging is going on, and then praying while.
Wow.
But I'm not sure that, I think it's better to pause afterwards, because like The Crowning with Thorns,
it doesn't last very long.
Huh? Yeah, you can't get a rosary in.
But it, that, some of the most intense meditations that I've had on the Sorrowful Mysteries have always been thinking about that movie, The Passion of the Christ.
Right. Well, that's what kind of gave me the idea, is like when I meditate and when I think about, when I try to pull up the mental image, put myself there at the scene, you know, that kind of stuff, I find myself putting myself into that movie. And so I thought, well, let's just pray the rosary while we watch it, you know.
And I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you have really little kids, it's probably not the best idea.
Yeah, yeah, definitely parental discretion. I mean, with that movie. In general, yeah. It's rated R.
Right. For a reason.
Yeah, yeah, for a reason.
Yeah. So, anyway, this segment, we highlight a man gear of some type, something that every guy likes, desires, wants, needs, and why there is something manly about this gear. What virtue lies underneath this gear, or how can we promote this in a way that highlights virtue and masculinity? So, this week's man gear are horseshoes. And for the game, like, horseshoes.
Yeah, for the game.
I mean, they're the same, but...
Maybe. Well, they'll, like, horseshoes that a horse wears, they have a bunch of different sizes.
Yeah,
and stuff.
But this is for the game. Dave and I have a weirdly long history with horseshoes.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, because even before, you know, we lived together, our families used to play in your backyard in our small faith group.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Like, it was you and your dad versus me and my dad?
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun. There's an easy one right there to kind of correlate why you should have horseshoes.
Yeah.
Father-son time.
And I think horseshoes are more popular in Oklahoma, Texas. You know, like, it's kind of a cowboy game. So
yeah,
I think
I could see that.
I'm not sure, but my impression has always been that horseshoes are not played as much in the Northeast or on the West Coast, you know.
Well, it's a lot of fun to do.
It is. And I think cornhole now has kind of become
the horseshoe,
like the horseshoes of the Northeast, you know, of the Northeast,
today.
And now horseshoes are very, 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 cornhole is very popular. You don't have to, you know, if a kid runs in front of the game and gets hit with a beanbag, he's going to be fine.
Right.
If he gets hit with the horseshoes, he's going to be down for a couple minutes.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. We actually played horseshoes this weekend.
Yeah.
We went out to southeast Oklahoma and kind of out in the country.
Who won that game? I can't remember.
Yes, you do. You remember. and we played some horseshoes. Dave and I, when we lived together right after out of college, we actually were playing so much that we actually made like a horseshoe, what do you call it, pits?
Yeah, no, I got kind of carried away.
We kind of got it. And then the dog ruined one. Yeah, but we made big wooden sandboxes, basically, and the exact distance that you're supposed to have it in between each
stake. It was like a fancy horseshoe pit that we used a few times before they got ruined.
Yeah, but it was...
But it was still very... Those few times, though, man,
They were a lot of fun.
There is. I mean, horseshoes is just a good game that... I mean, it's a lot like... It really is a lot like cornhole. Even the scoring is similar.
But I think horseshoes is tougher because it's heavier. They're heavier.
Horseshoes is definitely manlier than cornhole.
Because it's heavier. It takes a lot of precision. The technique you have to have a pretty strong technique because there's several different ways to do it, but to have the right arc on the horseshoe and the rotation of the horseshoe.
Yeah. So you want to have it, when you throw the horseshoes, you want to have it, I mean, there's a lot of different styles.
Right.
So, you know, there's the discus style where they like spin it like a frisbee so that it bounces and lands. And, you know, but I think the most popular style is a flipping so that the horseshoe is, it's opening up, coming into the stake.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can ideally get a ringer, which is when you get the horseshoe onto the stake. That's 3 points.
Yes.
It's the best, you know.
It's the most points
for one horseshoe. That's the best shot, yeah. it's not easy to do because you're 40 feet away and like you said, those horseshoes are heavy.
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, it's obvious that horseshoes takes a little bit more precision and mm-hmm. strength.
Yeah.
Than cornhole does.
It's a lot more fun if you're playing in sand.
I agree, because then that way the... Because this weekend when we were playing on like hard Oklahoma dirt.
Yeah.
And it had not rained in a long time.
It's tough to score points.
Right.
Because it just bounces right past.
The
game
took forever because we were throwing the horseshoes. The horseshoes would hit the ground and just bounce like crazy.
Right. But if you're thrown into sand, you know, they
stick.
Stick. And, you know, so if, you know, the phrase is... Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Yeah, right. So if you're within the right distance, you can get a point. Horseshoes is a super fun game. If you've never played it, you know, it's not expensive either. You can go to Walmart. I would imagine $25 get a set of horseshoes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, and springtime is like here, so the weather's going to be a lot better. This is a lot of fun to get out of the house. You can have your family play, even if you have little kids, you just scoot them up a little bit.
Yeah.
I think they even have little kids horseshoes like that are just lighter that you can get at Walmart. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen
that.
Yeah,
but they do. That are plastic.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But
I guess even if they're lighter, it still wouldn't be bad.
So, you know, that's just something that you could do as a family, and it's a lot of fun. It has a little bit of competitiveness mm-hmm. to it. You can you don't have to be so focused, you know, kids' attention span is squirrel, 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 yeah. You know, so.
But they like to throw stuff, especially if it's like, oh, dad throws these too. I always associate horseshoes with Knights of Columbus.
Oh, because they had the horseshoe tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad and I actually took third place somehow in one of our tournament.
Nice.
And it's like, but we lost a couple games. But at the end, like, we got third. I don't know how it happened, but it did.
Nice, because there were four teams. That's how.
But last year I couldn't play, so my dad and my father-in-law teamed up, and they won.
Did they really?
They won the whole thing.
So we figured out what the weak link was, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
You.
Is it me? Is it?
You.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
But yeah, we had a lot of fun this weekend throwing them. You know, it's a good, you know, just hanging out. We had barbecue, dude. Juan cooked these crazy ribs while we were playing horseshoes.
Wrapped in bacon.
Yeah, infused in bacon. Remember, he cut slits in the ribs.
He like wove.
And weaved the bacon.
Wove? Weaved?
Weaved. Weaved the bacon.
Weaven?
Woven.
Woven? Man, that's a hard word.
But he put the bacon in between each rib and then soaked
in
the
a weaving fashion.
In a weaving fashion. Yes. And then soaked the ribs in bourbon all day long.
Yeah.
And then put them on the grill. So, I mean, I don't know. With spring coming.
And it was not bad.
It was not bad at all. Not that, you know, everybody's fasting today on Holy Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but, you know, you certainly could. You have to tomorrow.
Yes.
If you're listening on the podcast and it's Good Friday,
you have to do that.
Maybe shoot for Sunday. I don't know.
But it's a good family activity. It's a good activity to do with a bunch of guys where you throw some barbecue on the grill.
Yeah. Even playing in grass is better than...
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So go get one. They're not that expensive. When we get back, we're going to have a special guest, Father Chris Petrashko.
We're talking about theology of the body.
This is going to be part one of two. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. And as promised, we have with us a very special guest for a very special topic. In fact, it may be the first time that we've gone a 1-2 episode topic.
It is indeed.
Okay, so without further ado, we have Father Chris Petrashko.
Petrashko.
Petrashko. Sorry, Petrashko.
Yeah.
Oh, I was so close.
He told us. They look like trash.
Yeah, it's good.
Petrashko. Father, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to spend with us, going back-to-back episodes, talking about the theology of the body.
So happy to be here, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So I thought it would be a good idea, you know, this being Holy Week, that we broach the topic of theology of the body. We haven't on the Catholic Man Show before, but, you know, with Christ's suffering, death, and resurrection, all about, you know, the Christian faith around.
Yeah.
I thought maybe this would be a good way to start Holy Week for us, for you and I, mm-hmm, Dave. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the theology of the body is so beautiful and it's complex and absolutely massive that we thought, I don't want to do it an injustice and, you know, try to get everything we can into just one episode. So let's just make this a 2-episode gig.
Right. Yeah. 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 How can we fit the theology of the body into an episode? That's right. Why we've never done it. And
right.
So 2 parts, a little bit better. Still, you know, we're going to be
cranking through quick.
Right, yeah.
So, Father Chris, for those who may not know what the theology of the body is, why don't you give them the brief 101?
Yeah, so theology of the body is a term kind of coined to describe St. John Paul II's way of examining our human body as male and female, and recognizing that the body itself is a sacrament, if you will, for the person, and that in the body is the very design of our Creator, the image and likeness of God that we have in our body and soul. And so he spent a great amount of time reflecting on that body, of course, that Jesus himself ended up taking on in his own flesh. And there's a lot of implications to the theology of the body, especially that can be applied to our relationship with God in the sacramental life, as well as with human sexuality in the celibate life and in marriage. So I think it's really crucial today for us to examine who we are as a body-soul creature and how to avoid maybe various extremes like treating ourselves like angels or beasts. We have to really come to an integrated view of who we are as images of God.
So, Father, I told you just a little bit before we got going here that Dave and I are part of a men's group that we meet every Tuesday morning, and we have for the last, I don't know, 5 years, Dave? Did we decide 5 or 6 years?
Oh, way longer than that.
Okay. Well, at least 6 years.
I think it's been
maybe 7 years.
Five
or six, 7 years. And one of the things that we decided to do was read all 129 talks from the Wednesday audience of JP2, you know, JP2's Wednesday audience, known as the Theology of the Body, which I highly recommend for a group of men to do, not by yourself. At least for us, I got way more out of it
when we were all together.
When we were all together, because we
difficult
read it
to understand.
It's a very his writing and what he was really trying to convey, and all of a sudden I'd be reading it, and you would stop me and say, "Hey, did you even think about this?"
Right.
And I would have never even crossed my mind, and vice versa.
Or one of us would be reading it. What does he mean here? And one of us would say, "Well, maybe he means this," and it's like, "Oh, that is what he means." We think.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of, I think if you are just now thinking about reading Theology of the Body, this is a great opportunity for you to maybe get a couple men together. We did it in the morning before work, but, you know, maybe you can do it then, or you can have it afterwards, maybe grab a beer with a couple guys and talk about it. But, Father Chris, okay, so
there's also a lot of other good introductory books, you know, Christopher West, Jason Everett. There's a lot of books out there that are good summary ways to start.
Right.
In fact, Christopher West did a 10 CD set recording back in the 90s, and it's still one of the best theology of the body things that I've come across. But there's a lot of other new spins on it these days, which are also really good.
Yes.
Anyway.
Okay, so Father Chris, to start, you know, when you first hear theology of the body, you're thinking automatically sexuality, right? You're thinking of the human body in and of itself. And that's not how John Paul II starts. That's not the foundation that he lays. Over and over again, if you read his audience, Wednesday audience, he talks about Genesis 2:24. I think that he's really trying to convey that God, you know, made this world on purpose and out of love. Is that a good, do you think that that's maybe a good foundation that he was trying to lay at the beginning?
I mean, it has to be the foundation that God loved us first, and that everything that follows subsequently to that is a manifestation of that love, right? And so it really gets into this whole notion of our responsibilities and the love that we're called in relationship to each other as a result.
So this last Sunday, well, I'm not sure when we're celebrating it this year. There was the Annunciation.
Yeah, I think it's
supposed to be this last Sunday, but maybe we're like moving it. We didn't move it last year, even though it was on Good Friday. Whenever the Annunciation is, it's really close to right now. And one of my favorite quotes by John Paul II is that the theology of the body, when the Word became flesh, the theology of the body entered through the main door. You know, that the very fact that God took on a body says a lot about our bodies. Can you unwrap that for us? Because there's a lot of wrapper there.
Okay, well, I think it's really important to kind of sit the theology of the body in the context of the culture that John Paul II was working in. I know we don't want to downplay it to just being about sexuality, but there are quite a bit of implications there. And one of them was, this is the pornographic period of Hugh Hefner. And the way that people were treating their bodies prior to that was also in a very repressed way. It's almost like the shell that we discard and fly away into heaven like an angel. And this whole idea of God taking on our flesh was reaffirming that our body is good, that what God has created in it is, in fact, something holy. It's a temple. It's beautifully made by God, and it has a design to it, and that we have to cooperate with that design in all its manners, in all its ways. And so I think what we're learning from St. John Paul II's theology of the body is to learn to love our own flesh. The hinge of salvation is the flesh, as the Catechism of the Church says. And in fact, it's because Jesus' own flesh was given up to us as food, as the sacrifice we need for salvation. And one's not going to sacrifice something that has no value to it. But one's going to sacrifice something that has incredible value for the salvation of the world. Of course, Christ's flesh and blood has infinite value. So Christ is really giving us a share in his own divinity by sharing in our own humanity. And this, we might call that a wonderful exchange that the incarnation reveals to us, that our Blessed Mother was given this wonderful news to rejoice in receiving the Lord in such a humble way in our own womb.
Yeah, I mean, that you're exactly right. I mean, I love when JP II, St. John Paul II, says, the body and it alone is capable of making visible what is invisible, the spiritual and the divine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's exactly what, you know, Father Chris was just saying, is that because Christ took on flesh, he gave us the opportunity to partake in the divine nature.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, if you can sit there and spend many adoration hours contemplating just that whole topic right there.
Yeah, what does it mean that God took on flesh? I mean, that you could spend your whole life.
Right.
And, you know, I think that we'll spend basically all of eternity trying to figure that one thing out. And it's just very beautiful.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're made for someone. Mm-hmm. You know, this wasn't an accident that we're all here, you know, and so like Father was saying that Christ made us, not because he just all of a sudden was bored one day and decided to make the world, but because he is love itself and wanted to share his love with his creation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it speaks to the degree of intimacy that he can have with us, because if God is able to be hypostatically united, that is to say he's one with his human nature. If he's able to be united through his personhood in that way, then he's also able to be united to us, not through nature, but through grace. He's able to be united to us in this very intimate, non-competitive way, where God actually becomes closer to us than we are to ourselves. So the incarnation actually reveals that God has always been so intimately close to us, but it's revealed in what he's capable of doing through the incarnation, which, like you said, that kind of closeness of God makes you pause and fall silent before our Lord just to listen to him and try to hear him speak in the depths of our being, because he is speaking to us there.
I think that the theology of the body is one of the things that really shows the depth and maturity of the Catholic faith, that it's not just a faith about prayer and about, you know, spiritual things, but it's a faith about real things, the body. Like one of the things that I learned was that the very first commandment in the Bible is go, be fruitful, and multiply.
Right.
Like, that's the first thing we're commanded to do, is to get it on, you know?
Right.
And it's just like, when you think about that, we do not have a prudish religion.
No.
Exactly. But anyway, we're here talking with Father Chris Petrasko.
See, it's not easy.
We're talking about theology of the body. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. You're listening to the Catholic Man Show.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We are in studio. We are joined via Skype by Father Chris Petrasko. We're talking about theology of the body. Your bodies are good, gentlemen. You are made beautifully.
And in the image and likeness of God.
Even though you are not as good looking as our female counterparts. You're beautiful in other ways. I'm just sure of it. I know it. Father, we were just talking over the break about kind of your background and everything that really theology of the body has done for you to bring you to the, you know, the place that you're at now. Can you recap that for us? Because it was just a great story.
Sure. Yeah. No, I was in my parish growing up, and we had a net team there, and they began to catechize me, and they introduced me to theology of the body, and I was very interested in that. Because there were divisive kind of questions that would come even in my own family about specifically matters of human sexuality and church teaching. And I all of a sudden started to get answers from the theology of the body that were very convincing. And then I was introduced to Christopher West, and I began to read him. And then I realized that St. John Paul II was the original writer, started to read him and couldn't understand anything that he was saying very well. It wasn't until the seminary that I began to really kind of interiorize a lot of that moral law, that teaching that he was giving us about God. And it helped me in a particular way, because prior to entering into the seminary, I had some reluctance in regard to the church's teaching about celibacy for the priesthood. And I was open, I was trusting that this was God's will for me, but I didn't really harbor an affection for that kind of life. And it wasn't until I started to really dig deep into the theology of the body that I realized that I didn't have to lose my manhood, I didn't have to lose my call to be a father, that my sexual nature, who I am, was all being taken up in celibacy, just in a different way. And so I really found the categories and the beautiful theology of the body to help me embrace my vocation.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. When you realize that celibacy is not the rejection of a good, the very act, celibacy is so good because marriage is so good, and you're giving that up, and that's why celibacy is so good, because marriage is so good. Like, I always kind of thought those things were diametrically opposed growing up. And then when I started studying this, I realized, oh, no, they're actually intimately connected. The goods of one of each and the other are very, very much related to each other.
Yeah, and they don't deny our own nature. Like, for example, the first the first Mass I celebrated as a deacon, I didn't celebrate Mass as a deacon, but the first Mass I helped with that as a deacon, I ended up afterwards doing a baptism, and it happened to be on Father's Day. And the same thing I did as a priest was also on Father's Day. I was able to baptize, and it just was a sign to me that, you know, this is my spiritual paternity, that's my nature, is to generate life, but it's now being done in the sacramental life of the church. And all of those desires to pass on to the next generation, that sense of creative energy and love that we have within us as men, was being taken up in that role. So it was very, very important to me, and still is today.
So, Father, we just, in the last break we talked about, or the last segment we talked about, you know, God made this world with a purpose, and He is love itself, and He wanted to share His love with His creation. He made us in His image and likeness, and because He made us in His image and likeness, and we are human beings, we are, you know, like a body-soul composite. We are our body. And so, if that is the case, you being, graduate with philosophy, I guess those are the premises. Thus, what we do with our body matters, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Our body is who we are. It's a component of who we are, and we have to embrace that part of us. And we can't really love without it. I mean, you can't just love by thinking, and even thinking requires your brain and your mind. So it's really just a very strange notion that we could do and honor God in any way without our body. It's just absurd.
Father, is the human being, the human person, are they a soul inside of a body? Or
no, it's more like an infusion. The body and soul are united in one. And in fact, the person is the we traditionally in philosophy define the person as like the will united to the individual substance of the person, but there's this integration in the sense of theology of the body, that the body becomes a sacrament for the person. It becomes the visible and tangible sign of who the person is, and it communicates and transmits the will of that person. And so there is this integration between the two of them. So that death actually becomes this horrible thing, because when we separate our body from our soul, we're actually incompletely who we are, and we're longing and thirsting for the resurrection, which enables us to actually be who we are as an embodied spirit.
That is so beautiful, thinking about the body as a sacrament of the person, the outward sign which makes real, visible and invisible reality. You know, the definition of sacrament we all learned back in catechism class.
Yeah, Baltimore. I think that's the Baltimore Catechism.
Yeah,
even.
I mean, but that is just, so I have to tell the story. I was trying not to tell the story. I have to tell the story. Okay. I'd like to, in advance, apologize to my wife. Sometimes when I come out of the shower, if she's there in the bathroom, I'll just stand and say, Pamela, ecce homo, which is Latin for behold the man. I really do that, and I think it is hilarious every time.
Okay, I don't know how to transition from that story, but you did say marriage. You did talk about marriage, so let's go there. Let's go with marriage. Father, so Christ is kind of the model of for Christian marriage when we talk about Ephesians 5, and you know, Christ being the model for love. For He laid down His life for the church, and as husbands and men, we're supposed to lay our lives down for our wives and for the church as well. And His model, talk a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, it teaches us that we're not called to mediocrity, because we're being called to imitate Christ's love for the church, which was anything but mediocre. It was free, total, faithful, and fruitful love, which is just a very challenging tall order to call us to, and yet Jesus does it Himself. So He's not just demanding this from afar, but He's embodying it in His own Son, Jesus, who is the husband to the church. And we're in that season of ending Lent right now and beginning the Triduum, where we celebrate the Paschal feasts, which is where Jesus dies and resurrects from the dead for us. But I think the consummation of his marriage really takes place on the cross when he gives his body to his wife, the church. And that word body, you know, that giving everything that he is, body, soul, and divinity, is what, when he dies in the Gospel of Mark, that's when the temple veil is torn, which is a very marital symbol. And this idea that God has made himself present and available to all people and to be united to his church, his wife. So this language, this way of understanding God, helps us understand the degree of intimacy that he wants with us, which isn't foreign to the Old Testament because it often speaks of God as a husband, but here we see it embodied in the Son, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and it's just so true. There's so many things that when you start reading and studying the theology of the body, it's like, wow, that is so obvious. You know, how did we miss that? You know, things like a man's body, a woman's body, they don't make sense on their own. You know, we were made to be gift to the other. And that's who the human person is. And, you know, like, I think that's kind of like what you were just talking about, that the relationship between the bride of Christ, his church, and Christ himself, that he came to give himself to her. And
she receives.
And yeah. Yes, exactly. She receives and gives herself back, which is, you know, that's marriage.
Right.
Right there. And, you know, it's just like, wow, what a deep theological lesson. Mm-hmm. That's just right here in your own body.
That's right.
Yeah. Father Chris, before, you know, we're going to do this back-to-back episode, so next week you're going to be on with us as well. But how can they get a hold of you if they haven't heard of Father Chris yet? Because I heard about you on Facebook, I think, and it was probably a couple years ago that I reached out to you, and I was just digging some of your lectures that you were giving and posting, and so I said, hey, Father, is it okay if I use some of this stuff for our Catholic radio station here? And you were like, absolutely. So how can they get a hold of you?
So I have a podcast called Fide et Ratio, which is Faith and Reason in Latin. It's on iTunes or Podomatic. And you can also find me, get a hold of me at on my Facebook page, which is Father Chris Petrashko. Try to spell that. Maybe you'll provide it for in the...
Yeah, I can do that. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, no, anytime, feel free to follow me in that way. What I try to do is I try to use... I'm not all about theology of the body. I try to use scholastic philosophy explain church teaching as well. So just the kind of pulling from a variety of sources to evangelize, especially in the intellectual way of things. And I also post my homilies, which you know, are made for a different audience, but everything is available online.
All right, awesome. Well, I appreciate it so much, Father Chris. Thanks for hanging out with us today, talking about theology of the body. Next week, spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about Humanae Vitae, picking this conversation back up for next week. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.